vultures near you will attack you, apparently.
So some propriety there or something.
Apparently, yeah.
I don't want to. Thanks for your call, and I want to return back to penises again, if we can, because you said rhinos. I mean, there are some different shapes. I mean, there's a reason that penises evolved. Some of these animals to have, and it, you know, the kind of shapes, the kind of knobs, and it goes back to this question of who gets to have their sperm.
Well, absolutely. So one of the things that's quite surprising, when you start looking at penis shapes, is not just the variety of organs that are transformed into penises. And I forgot, of course, that to mention the sea slug that has its male genitalia in its mouth. So open wide.
Very good.
but in a lot of species, it's not only that you have sort of different bits of your body that have become a penis. It's also that the structures are very often extremely elaborate. I mean, much, much, much more elaborate looking than a human penis, for example, with sort of decorations and bristles and all sorts of knobs and spikes. And the damselfly, for example, the black-winged damselfly, has a penis that has two horns on the end and an inflatable bulb. And this is apparently used for cleaning out the female's reproductive tract, not so that he can avoid disease, but so that he can remove the sperm of any previous lovers.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's part of the strategy of all these male creatures, huh?
Often, absolutely. Get rid of the sperm of a previous male, or try to tickle a female sufficiently well that she'll take up your sperm preferentially.
So we have this battle then. We have females being promiscuous and males trying to come up with ways to end the promiscuity.
Absolutely.
Gee, just like humanity.
Absolutely, well, yes. Males try to control and females try to resist.
Yeah. How interesting. And success, I mean, so it's a constant battle
It goes on forever, yeah. Goes on forever. But there are lots of things that males do to try to control females, you know, chastity belts and
right,
all those are very, very common, very popular.
Though we're the only ones that use those, right?
Other organisms have evolved things that function in the same way.
Like what?
Well, the most extreme, sorry, you're going to think I'm obsessed, but the most extreme is the honeybee.
Well, the fact that you did the research and wrote the book, that's not going to make me.
Well, the honeybee, the male, so honeybees mate on the wing, the queen flies off and all the males fly after her and basically she'll mate with anyone who can catch her. And when a male, and sometimes there can be, you know, as many as 25,000 males going after one queen. So, you know, you've got pretty poor odds of actually getting laid if you're a male honeybee. And when a male actually does catch the queen, he explodes and his body falls to the ground and his genitalia remain in position, apparently as a kind of chastity belt.
Why does he explode? I mean, what mechanism is involved in him exploding?
Well, you might as well go out with a bang.
I know, but I mean, I guess I can see why he would leave the genitalia in there.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to figure out what in the, you know, in the makeup of the organism would come up with some like bombs on a hatch door or something. That's wild.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we don't know why. And then rhinos, just to end it.
Yes,
rhinos.
Well, I'm sorry. So rhinos, the Sumatran rhinoceros has a very elaborate penis if you look at it, you have to squint slightly, but it looks rather like a cross. So Sumatran rhinoceros phallic symbols would be quite different from ours.
Why do you have to squint?
Well, it's more that the resemblance to the cross is not complete.
I see. Well, that makes sense. All right. Well, and it also makes sense that there would be this sort of tension between them as they're going on. Do we see that it's worthwhile, this tension? I mean, that it gets us...
No, between males and females,
you know? Yeah.
Well, it depends on what you think worthwhile is.
Better genetic... isn't that what the point of sex is, right? Better genes moving forward.
It seems to be effective, yes, absolutely. And it certainly, I mean, sex is responsible for, you know, it may be a lot of bother, but it's responsible for, you know, fancy tails and bright colors and feathers and flowers. I mean, without sex, there wouldn't be any flowers at all. I mean, so it's responsible for a lot of the flamboyance in nature.
All right, we have another caller. Let's go to the phones. Hello, caller.
Hello. Hi, doctor. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I'm a sagebrush cricket, and I've just molted into manhood.
Yeah.
And while checking out my new manly body, I noticed some teeth on my back. This seems like a funny place to have teeth. Can you tell me what they're for?
Well, you may not like the answer very much. I'm afraid that they're a gin trap. And I don't know whether you know what a gin trap is, but a gin trap, they used to be put around on British country estates to catch poachers. They're a sort of device that, you know, when you step in, when you put your foot in them, they close up, they clamp down on. And the one that you have on your back is actually to catch females with. So in sagebrush cricket sex, the female is on top by convention, and when she climbs onto your back, you grab her with the gin trap. You sort of flex your back up, and this clamps onto her. This means that she can't escape.
Wow.
So I'm afraid it's basically a device that allows you to rape her.
Oh, really?
Oh, my.
and then does he ever let her go?
Yes, he will let her go, but the problem is, okay, so there's another bit of a strange anatomy that you have that you may not have noticed being distracted by your teeth.
Yeah.
But you have little stumpy, fleshy wings, hind wings, and you can't fly with them.
I don't know if I'd call them stumpy. Kind of small, but...
Well, I'm sorry, I don't want to hurt
your
feelings.
I'll never be able to fly with them?
You'll never be able to fly with them. I'm afraid they're there for the female to eat. And she's going to climb onto your back, and she's going to start eating you. And
oh, man.
And the problem, there's a second problem, which is that once a female has started eating you, when she goes away, it leaves, you know, it turns your wings into sort of mutilated sculptures. I mean, they're going, you know, with blood, you know, blood clots and all this sort of thing. And the problem is that other females don't like that. They find it, you know, they'd much rather mate with a virgin than with somebody else's chewed goods.
Yeah, I guess I don't blame them.
Thank you, doctor. Thank you. Bye. Thank you. Sorry about that. So does that mean that's their way of...
A female climbs onto a male's back and basically starts looking for these hind wings. And if she finds that they've already been eaten, she's going to leave.
All right. Well, we'll come back with more phone calls from our listeners and more talk about sex with Olivia Judson. This is Weekday on KUOW.
I am not trying to seduce you. Would you like me to seduce you? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Dr. Tatiana's Sex Advice to All Creation, The Definitive Guide to the Evolutionary Biology of Sex on Weekday on KUOW Seattle. I'm Steve Scherr. Olivia Judson is the author of that book, Studying Sex and the Behavior Thereof. So that's a pretty wild description of what happens with that cricket. And you used the term rape. So is that happen a lot in the animal kingdom?
It seems to be reasonably common, I'm afraid. In this particular species, it seems to be a sort of tactic of desperation because males that have had sex once won't be able to have sex again if they don't resort to force. That's not always true. I think one of the most sinister examples of rape is in the little brown bat, where everybody hibernates in big colonies, and they all hang upside down. And males will sometimes wake up during the hibernation, and they'll start wandering through, basically raping hibernating bats. Sometimes they'll rape males as well. But it's all quite unpleasant. And lobsters sometimes rape.
Wait, before you go to the lobster, how do they do that? I mean, how are they raping males and females? They're just looking for orifices, or are they just spreading their seed wherever they can?
Well, presumably they're anxious to get back to hibernation, so presumably they're not looking too carefully.
I see. So they're just moving.
Yeah.
Okay, and lobsters? I find it all just so... It's, you know, we have a pretty mundane life, really, thinking about it.
I think it puts things into perspective, yeah. Makes you kind of glad to be human.
Yes.
Yes. and you also have a lot of rape in birds. There's a species of goose where females, they're likely to be attacked. Every female on a big colony will be attacked at least once during the nesting period, usually. Sometimes some will be attacked several times. And the reason they're usually attacked is because their partner is off trying to rape somebody else. yes, it's pretty bad. And Even honey eaters, which are very small African birds that eat bees. Absolutely, it's respectable married men who try to commit rape. So if a female leaves her nest, if she's not accompanied by her partner, she's highly likely to be attacked by other males just kind of loitering around, and all of them will turn out to have partners on the colony. So it's not
doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So that sort of sounds like people in some ways, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are there any female raping creatures?
Well, I tried to find out about that. I didn't find any. But you certainly, I mean, you know, males have a bad time in other respects, like the praying mantises and spiders, you know, ripping their heads off their lovers and that sort of thing. So males have a bad time in other respects.
So there is a quid pro quo.
I think so.
All right, we have another caller. Hello, caller.
Hi. I'm a splendid fairy wren, and I'm concerned about my husband. He keeps going to the doctor because he's convinced his sperm count is too low and we won't be able to have kids, but he ejaculates like 8 billion sperm at a time. So I don't really see how he can have a shortage. Do you think he has a problem, or is he just being neurotic?
Well, I think that he's a bit disingenuous, your husband. I think this stuff about going to the doctor is a little bit bogus. I think that his absences could be better explained.
Oh, he's one of those guys.
Yeah, he's.
Do you think he's having an affair?
I do think he's having an affair. Absolutely. Does he go off when he goes to the doctor? Does he take the doctor a pink petal? Does he fly off with a pink petal in his...
Sometimes.
Yes, well, that's not to pay the doctor. That's to seduce his mate or his paramour.
I knew it.
I'm sorry about that.
Anything she can do other than take a paramour of her own?
Well, I don't want to ask you a personal question, but perhaps you already have.
Well...
Ah.
We all have to have hobbies.
Well, splendid fairy wrens are notorious for living in an aristocratic, 18th century aristocratic lifestyle with males and females both having partners, but living in couples, keeping up appearances.
But they keep up appearances. Oh, that's very nice. Well, so splendid fairy wren, thank you.
Thank you. Did
you have any last questions on that? You feel pretty good about your answer?
Yeah, I do. I feel fine. And, I mean, we'd be mediocre fairy wrens if we lived any other way.
Absolutely.
So. A nice point.
Thank you. Very nice point.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And bye-bye. And is that, are there many people? Many people. Look at me. Are there many creatures that try to live in that keeping up appearances sort of motif?
It happens from time to time, absolutely. But the thing that's interesting about fairy wrens is that quite often all of the chicks that a male is feeding won't be his. So he'll be, you know, he and his partner will live together for a very long time, but quite often he won't be actually contributing food to the chicks that have his genes. It's quite a, and this explains why he has such a high sperm count, you see, because when, females are mating multiply, then they have sperm from several males competing to fertilize their eggs, which is what we call sperm competition. And if sperm competition is sort of like a lottery, so the more tickets you buy, the more likely you are to win, then one of the first things you should expect to see is that sperm counts will start to go up. And that's absolutely what happens. So that explains why a bird the size of my fist has a sperm count significantly larger than yours.
All right, then. So you think. Olivia Judson is our guest. So the last part of your book is about ask the question whether men are necessary. Did you come up with a conclusion to that?
My conclusion is usually, but not always.
Not always. When are they necessary? For some of these things we've just been talking about, of course, but it couldn't really be done any other way, could it?
No, that's right. Well, there are organisms that haven't got males and females but still have sex. So the definition of a male is that he produces sperm, and sperm is small, and the definition of a female is she produces eggs, and eggs are bigger than sperm. But what if everybody produces sex cells that are the same size, but still different? So a gender is, if, you know, the definition of somebody is the same sex as you means you can't have genetic sex with them. Obviously, you can copulate with them, but you can't have genetic sex with them. And so if you have sperm sex cells that are the same size, then just because they're the same size doesn't mean that you can fuse with all other sex cells, right?
Right.
And so that means you can have sex without males and females as we know it. And then, of course, another complexity is if once you have male and female, if they're combined in one body, like hermaphrodites, or whether they're separate. And it's not, you know, it's not very clear why aren't we all hermaphrodites?
Why aren't we all hermaphrodites? We just don't know.
Well, there are no hermaphroditic mammals, no hermaphroditic birds. But it seems like often it's good to divide the labor. But sometimes, you know, the hermaphrodites do pretty well. In a lot of circumstances, hermaphrodites do pretty well.
All right, let's go to another call for Dr. Tatiana. Hi, caller.
Hi, my name is Vikram, and I'm a bronze-winged jacana. And I'm a member of a harem, and I've built my nest and everything. But my female won't pay attention to me and won't give me any eggs to incubate. What am I doing wrong?
I'm afraid you've got to make more noise. You know, you're just one of a crowd. You've got to draw attention to yourself. And the best way to do that as a bronze-winged jacana is to start yelling. Make as much noise as you can, and you can try to attract her attention. I mean, I really, bronze-winged jacanas have an unusual system for birds. The female is 60% bigger than you are, so...
Yeah,
so,
no kidding.
So I'm afraid you've kind of do what she says, but if you make a lot of noise, I think you'll get her attention, and then she'll give you some eggs.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Vikram, and good luck on that. And you really got to howl loud, huh? You really got to make a lot of noise.
Absolutely.
Huh?
Lots and lots of noise.
All right, well,
I'd actually like to be reincarnated as a bronze-winged jacana. I think they've got things pretty well sorted out.
Though. Male or female?
Female, oh, obviously.
Just checking.
No, the males do all of the work of they build the nest, they incubate the eggs, and they feed the chicks. And the female just kind of, you know, runs her harem and has sex.
And nobody explodes on her.
And nobody explodes on her,
which I think is fine. there's a comedian who... I saw recently, and he told this joke, and he said it was two scientists, and it was a joke about how one species of seahorse, the male carries the baby. And he said, why isn't that just called the female? And I guess you would tell me. Why it's because the male seahorse probably still has sperm.
That's right. Absolutely. The female has a phallus. I mean, there is another way that you could define male and female. So we always define male and female, that male produces sperm, female produces eggs. But you could define them in terms of who does more work. You could say, well, the female is the one who does more work, in which case, poor old Vikram would be defined as female, our bronze-winged jacana friend. But I don't think that's... some people may disagree, but I don't think that's such a useful definition. It doesn't tell you as much about a system.
So that is why. That's why we define it the way we do, and that's why, for the example, the males. There are other creatures, right? That the eggs aren't necessarily carried by.
Oh no,
the
absolutely.
Female, right?
So in a lot of fish, if anybody does parental care in fish, it's usually the male.
Is that sometimes we see holding them in their mouths or holding?
Absolutely.
Them in...
Yes. Well, and this can all go wrong too. The male Japanese cardinal fish, he broods fry in his mouth, and he can only do one brood at a time. And it turns out that if he sees a female sexier than the one he mated with, he eats his brood.
Really?
And rushes over to try to seduce the new woman.
Wow, that doesn't seem like a very evolutionary wise...
Well, it depends on how much benefit he gets from improving the quality of his mother, of the mother.
I guess so.
And a lot of frogs. I mean, the Darwin frog, for example, incubates tadpoles. The male incubates tadpoles in his vocal sacs. So for 60 days, he can't sing because he's got tadpoles.
You wrote that from time to time organisms give up sex. I mean, they have sex and then they become
asexual.
What's going on there?
Well, asexuality is very efficient. So if you think about it in terms of, in a human population, for the population to stay the same size, each female must have two children on average. But in an asexual population, each female only has to have one child for the population to stay the same size. So if an asexual female has two children, then the population will grow, will start doubling. So you can see that being asexual is much more efficient in terms of passing genes, and the population itself can start to grow much more rapidly. And so basically, in the short term, asexuality seems to have a very big advantage. The problem is that it usually, as I said, leads to extinction.
It peters out.
Yeah.
So it's somebody confused. They're confused about their long-term...
Well, it's, short-term versus long-term profit. A brief and glorious flowering.
You write about... So I think we covered rape and penis size. So two other questions on that. So there are all these varieties of penises. What about other varieties of vaginas or female genitalia that are as elaborate?
Well, okay, so it won't come as a surprise to any female listeners to hear that the female reproductive tract has in general been studied much less, and far, far less is known about its variety.
So that's why... Oh, really?
Far, far less. But Certainly, you would expect that there's a lot of that there's going to be coevolution of genital tracts.
You'd think so.
Absolutely, and so there is variation. It's just usually less obvious. But certainly, I mean, for example,
obvious because it's inside. It's internal.
So it's harder to study too.
I see.
It's also harder to study because you have to dissect the animal to find out. But you certainly, there are lots of. I mean, rats have a bifurcated uterus, so they have a uterus that has, two wings.
Does that help them be more reproductive?
Don't know. Seems to. Don't know. They certainly seem to do pretty well. But I'm afraid that it's much less is known, which is a pity.
So are we going to see more?
I hope so.
I mean, have you noticed if there are any researchers out there doing the work?
There's certainly a lot more work now in the biology of females generally, so I'm sure that this will come along with it. And it's very important, too, for understanding things like how sperm competition works and who wins sperm competition. And it can be very elaborate in many species, humans, thankfully, not among them. Females can store sperm for years. Can you imagine how awful it would be to become pregnant 20 years after an event you've entirely forgotten?
Wow. And do they do that deliberately? Deliberate
animals? Absolutely, right? Yeah. And so that often goes along with very elaborate structures as well. So, yes, great deal of complexity.
And the other, I guess my other sort of last question on that, we talked about, eating, creatures eating one another, creatures raping, creatures having these sort of elaborately, exploding bees. Do we see a lot of that strategy, which sort of is, it's where violence and sex and destruction sort of all come together?
Well, I think it's quite rough out there. It's quite rough, but it's difficult. It's difficult to tell the difference sometimes. I mean, mink have famously violent sex, and occasionally it goes quite wrong. So the male occasionally will bite through the base of the female's brain and kill her. But when you watch mink having sex, it just looks like this war. And then at the end, sort of both of them lie side by side, smoking metaphorical cigarettes and sort of relaxing on the bank. So it doesn't, it seems to be all perfectly voluntary.
And chemicals that are related to sex, are there studies being done to figure out, when you mentioned the one vasopressin for the vole, are triggers being understood more and more as animal sex is being studied? And is there some benefit to them?
Well, certainly the chemical of the chemistry of sex is very complex, and the best understood situation is in fruit flies, as so often is the case. And fruit flies, when they have sex, they don't just give sperm; they give lots of other chemicals as well. And some of these have a wide range of different effects. Some of them will turn the female off sex, so it's a kind of chemical chastity belt. Some of them will persuade the female to lay eggs, lots and lots of eggs right now. Which may be a way that the male is trying to sort of get her to use his sperm, so she'll lay lots of eggs before she has sex with anyone else, and lots of things like that. Housefly is the same thing. So housefly sex usually takes about an hour. Sperm gets delivered in the first 10 minutes. The rest of the time, the male is busy delivering chemicals that will keep the female from having sex again.
Ever?
In most cases, yes.
Of course, houseflies don't last very long anyway.
It occasionally wears off, but in at least 80% of cases, it doesn't wear off and the female will never have sex again.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's all due to the chemicals. So if you force them to have coitus interruptus, and so they've only had sex for half an hour, say, the female won't have got enough of the drug and she'll go off and get up to her tricks again.
Had drugs like that. Future, we just don't even know what the future is going to bring, do we? That's wild. All right. Olivia Judson, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for taking calls as well. Dr. Tatiana's Sex Advice to All Creation, The Definitive Guide to the Evolutionary Biology of Sex by Olivia Judson. This is Weekday on KUOW. See ya. Let's get a look at traffic, shall we?